Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to HJT Design Radio Straight Talk, a show dedicated to exploring all aspects of creating a great dental office, where the only dumb question is the question that's not asked. Here's Jim and Han.
Good evening, Jim Jarvis here, along with your co-host, Han. Han, how are you?
I am doing well, Jim. I'm doing
Excellent.
Well. Beautiful
Excellent.
Florida.
Well, we can't say that about Northwest Ohio. Today it was about 10 degrees below normal, kind of cool and rainy, but they say we've turned a hump and tomorrow it's going to be in the mid-70s, so I guess we can look forward to that. But tonight we've got an interesting show program. It's actually a three-part series. This is the first part of the three-part series, and tonight's episode number 33. Design build, not really the best way. Our next two episodes, we'll be talking about the construction management process, and the one after that, we'll be talking about the design bid build process, commonly known as the general contractor process. But tonight, it's design build. This is a term that's been used for so many ways and for so many things, but we're going to delve into it. We're going to find out what it is. We're going to talk about how it came about, why it's being used, obviously go over the advantages, the disadvantages, and give our opinions as to is it really the best possible way for you to develop your dental facility. So with that, what in the world is design build? Well, the design build is as Wikipedia and any definition would give it, is a procurement method. Basically, it's a process where you have a single point of responsibility. You have one contract. That contract is between you and the design build entity, and that contract covers everything when it comes to the development of your facility. And this could be for a renovation, this could be for a build out within your space, a retail space, for example, and without a doubt, it is used for new builds. And, you know, there's organizations and companies all over the country that tout the design build process as the primo best. This is the best way to do things. It's going to save you time, money, energy, frustration. You know, it's better than bread and butter. It's so good. You'll get it faster. You get it cheaper. I mean, we've heard it so many times, haven't we, Han? The advantages and the goodness about it is so good, you kind of wonder why anybody would do anything else.
Well, it's basically pretty sugar-coated, so it makes you feel good. The greatest thing there is when it comes to getting a facility designed and built. Okay, that's where the name comes from. Is that a single source that handle everything? Jim, could you explain to the listeners that what exactly does that single source entity is responsible for?
Well, in the true design build method, they're responsible for everything. They're responsible for the design of the project. They're responsible for the construction of the project. They're responsible for the schedule of the project, the overall cost of the project. They also are even responsible for the external consultants, like if there's a civil engineer required, let's say you're building on a new piece of land and you need to have civil engineering as part of your team, they're responsible for them. They're responsible for, let's say you're doing a renovation, and in your renovation, you might have some environmental issues. Those environmental issues might require that you have an environmental engineer as part of your team. They would be responsible for them. They really are the sole single point responsibility for everything. So you have one contract that is like this giant umbrella that covers everything. You have one point of responsibility, and some may say, wow, that's a really good thing. Well, we tend to think not. And the reason why, and we're just going to, I can jump right to it in that responsibility. The reason why that it's not the greatest thing in the world to have one single entity as the individual responsible for everything is there's no checks and balances. The checks and balances are thrown out the window. And that's what you give up in a nutshell. You give up any potential checks and balances for all the supposed advantages of speed, efficiency, less risk, cost savings, all those things that they say there. Now, you know, is that something worth giving up? We have our own opinions, and our opinion, at least my opinion, I know Han has his opinion as well, and they tend to be, no, it's really not the best thing to give up, because there are other ways and other methods that this could be accomplished and reap the benefits of what supposedly a design build give you without giving up that checks and balances system. And we're going to be talking about that in the next two segments of this three-part series. But
Jim, let me step back for a second.
Yeah.
When you say responsible for, you are referring to that the consultants, whether it's the environmental engineer or civil engineer, if you're doing a building that from the ground up, you will need structural, mechanical, electrical, plumbing, and architects. Are they responsible, meaning that the design build entity hire those professional engineers to work for them? Am I correct on that?
They're supposed to. That's right. Now, here's one of the, and you're exactly right, Han. A good design build contractor or design build entity will in fact hire or have on staff an architect, a designer, a civil engineer, a mechanical engineer, electrical engineer, a plumbing engineer, an environmental engineer, and all the other potential consultants. They're either going to hire them or they're going to have them on staff. Now, you don't know if that's the case, because your contractual relationship is not with any of those entities. Your contractual relationship is only with that design build entity. So the XYZ design build company is who you sign a contract with, and then they're responsible to bring all the other team members to the table and make sure that they're integrated in there. And at the same time, you don't know the level of quality of those engineering consultants. So you don't know if you're getting the young intern mechanical engineer who just got out of school and this is his first dental facility, or you're getting a seasoned mechanical engineer who's done numerous medical buildings and maybe done two or three dental offices, that kind of stuff. You have no idea. So unless you ask those specific questions and get that written into your contract with the design build entity, you have no control over who is your team. Again, a disadvantage for that single point of contact. Not the best idea to have one person. Yes, sir.
Yeah, my experience has been is this. You hire a design build company Often, if a company have engineer on staff, you're talking about a mid-sized to a large-sized firm that do projects in the multi $100 million. Okay.
Typically,
because then they can afford to have a full-time engineering staff on board. If you go to projects that are typical indicative of the dental offices, where the range of probably south of $2 million, okay, give or take, the likelihood of a design build company with anyone on staff that perform the engineering tasks and stuff like that will be very, very rare. It may be limited to one, maybe two, individual, but it's very rare. So those consultant engineering services are usually farm out, and it's not. And this is my opinion because I and experience in the area is that it's usually are not going to the best individual with the best capability, but to the cheapest. Lowest bidder, that would do the minimal on the job. So it's not even a matter of how old or how young; it's just a matter of how cheap.
Because you're exactly right, and that goes back to you don't know what's in the contractual relationship because you're not contracting with those other entities, so you don't know who's on the team. Heck, you don't even know what the thing is going to cost. You won't know what the drywall bid is. You won't know what the electrical bids are. And none of that stuff is known. It's the responsibility of the XYZ design bid entity to keep that under the price that he or she gave you. So let's say they gave you $1.5 million to do your project. As long as they deliver that project at $1.5 million based upon your very simplistic scope, then they fulfilled their contract. And you have no idea of the level of quality that is there. You have no idea of the level of workmanship and or the level of the engineering talent that was involved in that. All you know is that you got it for $1.5 million, and you got it on time. Now, some people think, well, that's a good thing. They can guarantee a cost, and they can guarantee a schedule. But again, what do you give up for that? You give up an unbelievable amount of control. You give up an unbelievable amount of checks and balances. Now, remember, the reason why you're doing this, you're developing a new facility, and this may be your forever, I'm going to retire from this facility, I'm going to pass it on to my son or my daughter who's getting out of dental school, this is going to be their facility, their legacy, that kind of stuff. So you're looking at a building that you want to last in the test of time. But in reality, what you were delivered or given is a building that was built as quickly and as cheaply as possible so that they could make, one, the most money that they possibly can, and two, they can get it done very, very quickly because we all know the proverbial, time is money. And it is true. Time is money. So the faster they can get it done, whatever particular method they can use, sometimes maybe not the best method. Now, don't get us wrong. We're not here tonight to bash up on every design build entity that's out there. There are some good ones. There are some that are very, very, very ethical, and they try their best. But the overall process is not created in such a way to be able to give you all of those checks and balances that really you deserve, because those facilities, when they're all said and done, originally the design build process was created way, way back when the manufacturing industry was looking for a methodology that would allow them to say, okay, I want to go into that facility, I want it for X dollars, and I want it in this many months. That's what it was created for basically creating factories. Well, dental offices are not factories. They're much, much more, complicated, extremely complicated, probably some of the most complicated facilities, and there's a multitude of the same thing happening over and over and over again. So let's say they screw it up once. Well, you've got 10 operatories. Well, maybe it gets screwed up 10 times. So it's not even a single screw up. It's a multiple of 10. So the risk is huge. And the advantage, well, in our mind, maybe isn't the best because there's other ways of solving this problem. Does that answer the question, Han?
Yeah, you're right. Actually, the term design-built, I experienced it back in probably the late 80s, and you're right. I was working for local engineer architecture firm that, and where their clients are the Fortune 500 corporations across the country who have factories. And when you build a factory, it is a shell. You want to get it, you want to get the shell up, the floor down, and then you get the equipment in, and it's not as complicated. Again, it doesn't require a lot of hand-holding, a lot of coordinations. It's just a matter of getting the people out there, getting things erected and pour and open the door. Qualities and accuracy and all that stuff is not high on the high on the priority list. The process, the design build process, are not necessary for those that need to know everything. I think the mindset that typically a good match is for that type of process is good enough. Okay, if you go out and you're looking for, you have a shopping list and say, my building is 3,000 square feet, I need I need 6, 7, possibly 8, operatories, and here's a list of all the amenities I need and stuff like that. Anybody can promise you how much they can do it for. The main thing is that you put in the cart, usually that means you put the cart in front of the horse, is that you don't know the quality. You don't know the quality. You are only focused on what can I get for that much and when. For instance, you wouldn't know the difference between a $10 per square yard carpet versus a $40 per square yard carpet, or you don't know that the drywall on the wall in your office are half inch versus 5/8. So the quality is not spelled out. It's just mainly a shopping list of things you must have, but the detail is never spoken of. So it's a process that perhaps a mindset of, hey, that's good enough for me. It would be a good match. But other than that, we strongly believe that it's not to the best of the client's interest to pursue that type of delivery method. Jim?
Now, one advantage that we hear so many times that, this is a real advantage for design build method, is that a design builder brings value engineering into the design process. Well, value engineering is a process of what we've talked about. Go back to some of our podcasts specifically about the team members, but value engineering is where the construction entity, whoever that might be, gives a opinion on what might be the best way to solve a particular issue or problem. And, we all know there's multiple ways to build a wall. And so the construction entity is going to give us his opinion on, okay, masonry wall is going to cost you X. A block wall is going to cost you Y. A brick wall is going to cost you Y plus. A synthetic stucco covered steel stud wall is going to cost you something else, and so on and so on. So on that particular day and that particular time, sure, the construction entity knows what costs are. That's their job. They should know how much it costs to put up a drywall wall or how much a window system costs. They should know that, and they know how that stuff changes. They should know, well, steel is up this month, so maybe we look at doing this particular thing out of wood, or wood is being overbought, and it's become more scarce, so the price is going up on wood, like glulam beams and those kind of things. So maybe we should do this thing out of structural steel or light gauge steel. That's the kind of input in structural that you would like to have during the design process. And we value that input. Matter of fact, it's crucial to giving you the very best solution for your particular budget. But there are other ways to get that. You don't have to just do a design build method to get value engineering integrated into the process. Tune into us next week, and we're going to talk about construction managers. And that's a prime way to be able to get that same kind of information into the team, in our opinion, a much better way.
So, hey, Jim, the term value engineering, I think, have been misused and overused in a lot of the discussion. Is that when I hear the word value engineering, it means that you have a wall assembly. We can do it this way, that way, or that way. This way, it's a little quicker because the material can be acquired the same day and so on.
Mm-hmm.
This way, no, the other way is that it may take 3 days longer to get the product, but the wall is a lot more durable and so on and so on. So you look at the best way to do to execute a certain requirement, and it doesn't cost you anymore.
What you laid out is an exact example of what happens internal on the design build methodology that you as the owner do not get to be privy to. That decision or those decisions are all being made by the design build contractor, his design team, and his engineers who all work for him. They don't work for you. They don't work for you, the dentist. The design builder works for you. So he only shares with you the final result of that discussion, if at all. He may just say,
"What? You're
getting a wall."
The term value.
You got a wall there. Yeah.
It's a wall is a wall, right?
Yeah, exactly. We know that a wall is not a wall. A wall could be made up of so many different things. And walls may not be a good example. Let's use countertops. Countertops are
Jim, a wall is a perfect example to use. Let me express. Okay, you walk into a building, you look at the wall, and you say, "I like it." Well, what do you like about it? "I like the paint." Okay, that wall, behind that wall, it could be a 2x4, or a 1x3. All you know is they see a wall that's been painted. It looks nice. But the construction of it, maybe it's only half an inch of drywall. The stud is based at 2 feet on center instead of 16. Okay, that wall maybe only go up just above the finished ceiling. So, yeah, there's a lot of things that you don't know. You have no, that you, you know, maybe you have no input in. You have no decision in. Is simply that you have a wall, okay?
And
that
wall
may
have no insulation in it, where you would like to have insulation in it. The wall could be made out of wood studs, which typically are not as straight and true as a steel stud. If code allows them to do it out of wood stud, sometimes wood studs are cheaper, so you're going to see a wood stud wall. Go walk through any facility. And Han and I are as trained in this, we do this, we walk down a facility and you look down a long wall or look, you know, kind of at an edge of a wall and follow it as it goes away, and you'll see weevils and wobbles. 9 times out of 10, that wall's made out of a wood stud. Whereas in, if that wall is dead flat straight, like a pool table, then more than likely it's a steel stud wall. Well, again, that decision is not something you as the owner get to make. You don't even get to be part of that discussion. That's between the design builder and his design team, whether it's an architect, a junior architect, a draftsman, whomever, who's doing all that stuff. Those are decisions that are made behind the scenes, behind the curtain. You don't get to be part of them. And you still get a wall. He's fulfilled his contract. He's given the building to you at $1.5 million. He's met the schedule. It's got a wall. Is it the best thing?
Oh, but see, you see the term, the term value engineer has been used a lot, and it's usually referred to what can we cut out of the project.
Well, yeah, it's extremely bastardized and has a bad terminology. Used properly, value engineering is very crucial to the design process to give you one of the very best final solutions. But you're right. It's usually about what can we cut out of the design process? What can we cut? Corner can we cut? Can we do this wall with two foot on center versus 16 on center? Can we, you know, what can we accomplish? Can we build a countertop with a particle board substrate and put a plastic laminate over top of it? You know, it's going to be hidden, right? Or do you actually want something that is substantially stronger, going to last a test of time, maybe even because it's in an environment that might get wet, you want to have something like even a marine plywood, which is super strong and super sturdy, or a cabinet-grade birch that's super dense, those kind of things. Again, you don't get to make any of those quality decisions processes. That's all decided behind the scenes by the designer and the architect and or the builder, and more than likely it's by the builder dictating to all of his subordinates, you will do this, you will do that, you will do this. And there isn't even a discussion about, well, this is kind of a wet area, you know, it's a sterilization area where they're going to have, you know, liquid and fluids and sterilization stuff and steam and all those kind of things. Maybe we should upgrade. That never happens. You don't get that.
Yes, it will happen, Jim. It will happen.
Well,
it
happens
at
our
cost.
Methodology, but it doesn't happen in the design build methodology.
I believe that the design build are usually set a base point. Yes, you say, you come and you say, my budget is 1.5 for the building with this many ops, with all these amenities and so on. And the entity that take on the job say, I need 20% profit, take it right off of there. So you basically work with, you know, 80% of the budget. And from that, they say, we can do it with this, and this, and this, and this, and this, and achieve that end goal of giving the client a building with this amenities and so on. You have a shopping list. The quality is irrelevant. It's like going out and buy 10 pounds of hamburger. Okay, is it 10% fat or 30% fat? You still got 10 pounds, right? I mean, if you're looking for 10 pounds of hamburger and you didn't specify that you need it to be actually 7% fat, you're going to get the soot. You're going to get the bottom, the lowest quality, but you still get 10 pounds. So when you look at the building and the design build process, is that there is a benchmark that they try to hit. So if their budget if they give you an allowance for what you need doors, okay? So if you want solid cherry door stain, okay, with you know, with a commercial grade hardware, well, it's going to cost you extra, another maybe $300-$400 for the door, because they didn't, they only budget for, you know, low end, maybe hollow, you know, hollow core door. It may stain, and it's middle of the road hardware. So you can still get what you want, but it's in addition to what your budget allows. So those are the change order. There's always wiggle room for the contractor to make more money if you're willing to dump more money into it. Once you start to buy more quality, why the heck go with design build?
Right, right, exactly. Well, here's another situation that arises that we've seen, and that has to do with the actual act of construction. Now, Han and I have talked about in previous episodes about the construction observation portion, where we and our team are out on the job as the building is being built, and we observe to make sure that the quality of the construction is in keeping with the design intent. And that could be everything from let's use the countertop example again. The countertops were specified to have a solid MDF substrate, which is the material underneath the formica or plastic laminate top, and we see that they use regular old particle board. Well, that's an inferior product. Now, most people would never ever know that, because one, they're not trained to look for it, and two, they don't know the difference between the two products. You know, this is our business. This is our experience. This is what we do. So if MDF is specified but not installed, that's where things can be remedied while the construction is in process. Now, let's theorize and say, that is something that you find out 2 years later down the road after you've taken the building and you've occupied it, and you find out that, oh, crap, my countertop in this particular area is saggy. You then look into it and find out, oh, well, wait a minute. It was done with particle board and not MDF. Guess who's responsible for that? You are. You are responsible to pay to replace it or live with it. So that checks and balances do not exist in the design build process. How do we like to say it, Han? It's like the fox watching the hen house. And again, I don't want to beat up on any design builders out there that are good ones, because there are some, and they wouldn't try to purposely put inferior stuff into their product, you know, into their final solution and those kind of things. But, you know, the checks and balances are there for a reason. Yeah, the checks and balances are there for a reason. It's to ensure that the original design intent is there and it's continued all the way through to the completion of the project, so that 2 years down the road, 3 years down the road, 4 years down the road, that thing is still performing the same way it was from day one, because you made the right decision and said, yeah, I wanted the higher quality material here because I knew it was going to be taking a lot of abuse and I didn't want to have to deal with it 5 years from now. You were saying, huh?
See, if you, yeah, Jim, see, if you don't have things spelled out, you don't have drawings that are done to in detail to tell you what everything is. First of all, you already signed a contract with a design build company to deliver you a project without any detail of what it is that you expect. Okay, it's hard to go back and say, by the way, I was expecting. Well, you know, you can expect all you want. But if it's not in writing, it's tough. Okay.
Yeah. Hey, I got you that. I gave you that six operatory $1.5 million building. What are you complaining about?
Yeah. No, here's something else. Okay. My gosh, it just slipped my mind that quick. All right. Take it away, Jim.
Yeah, one of the things, the other thing that the advocates of design build like to say, well, it puts all the burden of risk onto the design build team. So they're at risk for everything. But in reality, that's not the case. They're actually at risk for a lot less. And here's the reason why. They're in total control over any potential risk. So the risk of maybe having a contractor or a subcontractor put something in wrong or inferior, the design builder makes the decision himself on whether he's going to let it slide and be installed or whether ask the subcontractor to repair or replace. Okay. That decision isn't even in your basket of things to talk about. You don't even get to be privy to that information. You don't even really know what things cost because the design build process is a total lump sum. Here it is. It's $1.5 million. You don't know what any particular items are costing you. You don't even know the quality of what they should be or you're not part of that decision-making process. And that's one of the biggest, I guess, beefs that I and Han have about the design build process is that the wrong entity is making all the recommendations to the owner who should be making the decisions. Whereas in the design builder is making all the decisions without the training, input, and knowledge about the particular items. And it's not his building. It's your building. You have to live with it. Oh, sure, it's his reputation. But you know what? The reputation is, hey, I got it done, and I got it done for $1.5 million. Now, nobody comes back and says, yeah, you got it done for $1.5 million. But in reality, it's something after 4 or 5 years from now, I've got to replace the windows, I've got to replace the floor, I've got to replace this, I've got to do this, I've got to do that. You never hear that. That's too far down the road. So those things never come back up again. And so there's a major risk in using a design build process because of that.
Jim, actively right now, we have projects being built on design that we've done, and the client uses a design build contractor to build it. So they took our design and they have their local architect execute the design and all that stuff. So in the discussion with our client on the design of where the process is, where, how things come along and so on. And I've learned this, look at the drawings and they agree on $150 per square foot. It's a, build out in the retail space, which is, for our experiences, that's above average in finishes. Everything is commercial grade and all that good stuff. In the design or the finished product, there are some nice features in the design and things of that sort, so that you have not just a vanilla plain Jane product. I look at the drawings and I go, they're providing a flat ceiling from front to back, side to side. So you have one level ceiling. There's no drop anywhere. There's no bulkhead. There is nothing but a flat sheet. There is no feature over the front dust, so it's because you didn't hire them to give you the things that you expect. If you hire a design build company, hopefully you have the discussion that you want to be involved or hope to have some input in the finished product. after you sign the contract and they move forward, it's too late. If you like a higher quality carpet, there's always room for them to get more money because they did not allow or account. They only allow so much for that, you know, for that material, and so on. So if you want something, you expect something nice, make sure you have that discussion before you sign the contract or hire them to do. Otherwise, you're pretty much out of luck. The only advocate you have on a design build project is yourself. Nobody else. Don't let
right.
it.
And
no,
the,
don't
and
let
the
anybody,
only
yeah.
you're exactly and you're exactly right. And the only real legal item that you have to tie you to the contract and to the design build entity is your contract with them. So if you are going to go down the way of design build, make sure that there's a whole snot load of stuff in that contract that at least covers your anticipated areas, the things that you want to have as part of. So at least you have something to tie them down with. And then, you know, if later on down the road it's found out that they didn't put it in there, then you have some legal remedy, at least something to fall back on to be able to say, no, actually my contract said this and you said that you were going to provide that. The design build process is great for factories, not so great for dental offices. We're the advocate of saying dental offices need to, they're very complicated, but they need to be created and structured well, meaning they're of a high quality, the highest possible finishes and systems that you can afford to put in them, because these buildings take a lot of abuse. They see, if you're successful, which is what we want you to be, they see a lot of people. You see a lot of people coming through those doors, and that kind of abuse wears on a building. So you need to have a good quality floor system, a good quality wall system, a very good quality HVAC system, so that, you know, your patients are comfortable, your workers are comfortable, you're comfortable when it's, you know, 20 degrees below zero outside, or when it's 99 and 100% humidity outside. What's the quickest way to destroy your business is to have a crappy building that the patients don't want to come to. You could have the very best service in the world. You could have the most interesting and unbelievable patient experience. You can have great hygienists and everything else. But if you have a crappy facility that does the exact opposite of what you're trying to portray with your service, you're not going to succeed. People won't come there. They won't come back. They might come for one time and only one time, and then they're going to go someplace else because they don't feel comfortable. Your facility is an extension of your service. Some people don't like to hear that. Some people think we're full of crap when we say it, but it is true. Human beings, when we walk into a facility, we make a judgment of the quality of the service before we've even walked past two steps in the front door, just by our surrounding.
Yes, we judge.
We do. We judge. We judge very quickly.
Yes, we do.
And then it's either reinforced by the staff, or then, you know, if you've got a great facility, you've got a great look, you've got a really nice first impression, and then your staff reinforces it, and then the service that you provide even reinforces it more. That's a recipe for success of a dental practice. Now, how do you get that? Well, in our opinion, you don't get that with a design build process, because the design build process is actually 180 degrees opposite of that. All they care about is how fast can I get it for what price? And that's the two things. Quality is not in that equation. It's the bare minimum, because that's what was in the contract. So Han, what pitfalls? I know we've seen so many pitfalls. We've seen so many examples. Just the other day, we had an example of a client that was walking through another project that was being done, and it was done under design build process, and the subcontractors, the guys on the job, expressed to our client who was walking through the project that they were unhappy with what the designer had produced for them to be able to do their work. Now, you know, I mean, that's just a prime example. We see it so many times that you'll actually get the very bare minimum and sometimes even less than that in the way of documents, drawings, and specifications, and those kind of things, so that the guys out there, the contractors, the subcontractors who are actually building these things, can build what you want to have built. Well, if those individuals, those guys who are actually building it, are complaining, then you know the quality of the design work was crap.
Jim, is it due to lack of information?
It's due to lack of information, lack of money being given to the design team, okay, because the design team is basically either the cheapest on the block or they're internal to the organization, in which case then the pressure's even more to get it done quick and fast, you know, cheap and dirty. And,
yep.
You know, so it's one of those two things that are happening, where we, on the other hand, are advocates that you solve all the problems on paper. You solve all the issues in the design process. You put out a very thorough, cohesive set of documents so that the contractors, the subcontractors, the trade contractors, the guys that are out there making it, building it, putting the walls on, putting in floors, putting the ceilings up, they look at this stuff and say, yes, I know exactly what I need to build, and this, I know what has to be done. And you get the result. So, you know, if your result is to have an attractive, exciting, aesthetically pleasing space, especially as you walk into this building, what's your best way of making sure that you get that? It's not with the design build process. It's with the process where you actually have a group like ourselves or anyone else that actually specializes in this, which there aren't very many, but someone who really knows what they're doing, putting together a set of your documents so that the contractor, the trade contractor, and the subcontractors can actually build what was originally thought of as the design and the intent. And so, you know, that's a big problem. Here's another unbelievable. Well, and we've got an issue. Go ahead, and I'll let you get your thought in.
Let me throw in a little bit here, Jim. I mean, how do you set up for success if you start with a group of sub and you give them a floor plan, just a floor plan, and say, what can you plumb this for? What can you wire this for? What can you, you know, stud and sheetrock this space for? You know, the same question to every tree without the detail. Okay? The guy who might say, okay, I am, you know, I know that you're also giving this document or this floor plan to Bob down the street, and Bob tend to be a little bit right on the border, and I want this, so I'm going to take it for a little less. And that applies throughout the whole process with all the subs. You got the lowest guy going to do your heart surgery, okay? And then he gets maybe a set of drawings that have a few pieces of information, and you expect those subs to deliver, you know, the product that you want at a high quality. That's not going to happen. And the guy that control all of that is the one you have contract with. And they typically beat the hell out of everyone to keep everything low so that the profit is met. at the level they want. They don't sacrifice
or more.
Their profit. They sacrifice
profit,
your quality.
Profit, yeah, exactly. The profit may be set at, let's say, 20%, but if he makes 27%, that 7% goes in his pocket, not in yours. You don't
That's
get it
right.
back. So tune in to us next week, and you'll learn how you can get that 7%, because we're going to talk about that. But here's another very important aspect, and it all has to do with a team that we talk about one of our first episodes, the team that's part of that's your team. Now, everybody in the team in a design build process, I think I'd mentioned, works for the design builder. Either they're hired by or they work within their space. So their loyalty, their commitment, their everything is to the design build contractor, okay, not to you. So again, going back to trying to maintain the quality, the observation of what happens on the job, all that kind of stuff, you're on your own. You're basically walking through this building, if you get to walk through it, without the expertise of the people that should be right beside you, helping you, the advocates, us, for example, and others who are that other set of eyes, that other set of ears that look at these things and say, yes, that drywall is wrong, or that concrete floor is of the wrong quality, or that particular material is the wrong thing in the wrong application. And, well, okay, we've got all this water over here that needs to be removed from the system before you can put in this product because it'll fail. None of that stuff gets caught because you're not that expert. You're great at being a dentist, but you're not trained as an architect. You're not trained as a construction observer. You're not trained in the construction technique methods and materials, and you don't have years and years and years of experience in doing this stuff. You need to have those people on your side to look over this stuff, because if you don't, you're going to end up with what you end up with and cross your fingers and hope that it'll last long enough. So, Han, what's your thought?
I think having the right advocate to make sure that everything that had been promised or everything's on the contract is delivered as stated. You can't go into a contractual relationship and not knowing what you're going to get. Your expectation, if it's not in writing, isn't worth anything. Okay, it'll be rude to expect something that you have not conveyed. And to change, to meet the expectation after the fact, will cost you dearly. Like Jim said, it's, being kind, in stating that the expert in the construction field is often 99% of the time are not the client. They're not trained in that area. You walk into the building, you might look at it and say, I like. But exactly what do you like? Is it right? Or it just simply eye candy? If you look across the floor and you say, beautiful tile. Well, it may be beautiful tile, but was it installed properly? Okay, is there a slippage where your patient might slip and fall and sue you? Is the edges where the kids area is round off or east so that kids don't get hurt. Is the glass in your door, are they temper? How do you know? All right. The check and balance, there is a process in it that we refer to as shop drawings. Is that everything is looked at, quantified, qualified, signed off before it gets built. That does not happen in a design build. All the decisions on the quality and execution of everything is called out for by one entity. That's your design build contractor. Whether they are well-versed in the field of or construction, that's debatable. All right. We have worked with and encountered builders that couldn't tell you the difference between the 2x4 and the 2x6 to save his life. And no, it's not absurd. That is true. Okay, they're good at writing contract and calling the shots and schedule and all that stuff. But they may not, again, they may not be the technical know-how in the field. Okay, so they don't make the technical decision based on the quality and the right or wrong and the performance of the system. They make the decision based on the dollars. And if you don't know, you don't know. And so you need to have people in your corner that can provide that expert, input, that oversight, that check and balance on your behalf. It's an investment, okay? It's an investment you should have. And we've seen it too often where the people that have the knowledge on the both design and construction, they cut out because you may save yourself a dime here or a dime there. Believe it or not, the people that are most intimate with the detail of the project are usually your engineers and your architect who worked on it. Not slam it together, but actually work out the details. They're the people that know which way the door swings, what the construction of each assembly in the building. They know the code. They know practically every inch of that building that's being built by the contractor. I'm a betting man, and I would bet that is not true for most of your design build projects. You don't have experts on the team. It is purely everything is done on an economic level, and that may not be economically a good return on your investment for you at the end. Jim?
Let me add just a little to that, in the sense that we've been asked, and we'll do it, we'll give it everything we can give it from our side, but we've been asked to say, well, okay, fine, I'll hire you guys to do the design, the initial design, and then I'm going to hand it off to a design builder who's then going to take your initial design and going to construct it, for example. We've had that happen. We've had that being asked of us. And, sure, you can do that. Do we recommend it? No. We'll do it? Sure. But it's an issue of you give away that continuity that Han was just talking about from the initial design all the way through construction, because that design build contractor does not understand the uniquenesses that we understand that was part of the original design process. And all they're going to do is build you a building. And so there isn't that methodology in place that would establish the overall quality that should be there from just our initial design work. So yeah, at least you get the advantage of the initial design work in the efficiency of how things work and how they flow. Han works on hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of designs every year, and it's like as you work through these things, you really develop a expertise on what's the best way for things to work. And then working with the dentist, how they work and what's the best way for them to work, and we fine tune these things as best we can. But you do not have that continuity if you take that system and say, all right, let's just take the design work and give it to the design builder and move forward. The same thing happens with if you give it to a local architect and let a local architect do it in regards to finishing up our original design stuff. We much rather would be in a scenario where, for example, if you wanted to work with a local architect or even a local design firm, a design build firm, at least let us be part of that process in the sense for a very small fee, well worth it. Let us integrate in with who you're going to have build this thing and who you're going to have design this thing so that we can continue that continuity so that by the end of the day, your final result is what you really should be getting as opposed to what you end up getting, if that makes sense. Does that make sense, Han?
It makes sense, Jim. Let me add a couple thoughts to that, okay? The inception of the project, okay? If we get work on the project, we basically conceive the ideas, okay? And we work with a client and explain to them why, and why everything is where it needs to be and all that stuff. So it's a mutual collaborative effort with the client, the dentist. If in the event that the dentist decided to use a local people, and they do, it's for whatever reason they do, and the local architect may, and I have not have it happen yet. In over 30 years of my experience, where they call up and say, hey, Dr. Smith had hired us to do, to finish this design or execute this design that you did. Could we spend a few minutes and kind of walk us through your thoughts and your process and why, what is important that we need to adhere to so that the idea, the main core, and everything come out the way it should be. I have not run into that. They just simply run with it. This happened also with equipment people. When you give them a layout, an approved layout that we had labor over with the client to make sure that all the pieces and everything falls into place. And all they have to do is put in the equipment that they're going to sell to the client. And then they become Franklin, right, for some reason, and they have to tell us what it is that they want to do to the building that we have worked on so that they can put their site signature on it. And in terms of, so that I guess it makes them feel important. But it just bastardized the whole process, the whole project. It changed the dynamic, it changed the flow and all that stuff, and you get less than what you expected. So if you go with a third party or somebody else that's going to execute the design, encourage them, or at least put in place a communication process that we the originator of the design, have some that can provide consultation input to the execution team. So that way your design is not altered so much that you get less than what you paid for. Okay? Design built, work for a few people. Of all the years that I've been in this business, I've only known one that's sworn by it. I had the displeasure of being on a project that's done with design build process. And I tell you what, that was a bitter experience because you get to do the same thing and more for less. And it's much less than what I expected. It's oversell and underdeliver in a big major way.
But they gave it to you at 1.5, and they got it done on time, hon. Come on. What are you complaining about?
Yeah, I know. No, they did not. It's rare, okay? It's rare that they actually come on schedule, on budget. It's rare.
Yeah, yeah. Obviously.
Go ahead, Jim.
This is a part one of a three-part series. Next week, we're going to talk about the construction management process. And I think you'll be real excited to hear about this one because, in actuality, it takes all the advantages of the supposed advantages of a design build method and puts them into your hands. But at the same time, you don't give up the control. You don't give up the ability to have the team members that you want to have. You don't give up the quality. So that's next week. You're going to have an opportunity to hear about the construction management process. But in the last few minutes we have here, last week we asked for a new segment, and that is send us an email and questions, and we'll try to answer them online. So I picked one, and we've got a doctor in Alabama, hon, that says, I'm looking at a piece of property to build my new 6-operatory office. It's long and skinny, but I'm going to be able to get it for a great price. Can I make this work? What should I do next?
I think you should have the architect look at your site, or at least a civil engineer look at your site, but I think the architect will probably be more qualified to do so, to determine the size of your building, and then how the layout of the building can be done to make it work. I think in a short period of time.
To add to that, what you're saying is, I mean, we understand what a 6-operatory practice size-wise is going to take.
Yeah.
So to be able to create an initial design and keep it in such a way that it would potentially fit within the property is something that we would look at. I guess I would say that, Doc, it would be the best scenario is to have an entity like ourselves or someone else that understands this process and create that initial design based upon what your 6-operatory practice is going to be, keeping in mind that it has to fit within this site footprint. Now, they're going to have to evaluate a lot of things. You're going to have to evaluate your parking requirement. You're going to have to evaluate your building and zoning code, specifically your setbacks, and to be able to make a determination, you know, if you can actually even physically fit that building on the property. And we're talking, of course, about a new build. So you got to have your initial design, this initial what we call schematic architectural site plan, along with your initial floor plan, so that you can be able to say, yeah, it's going to work. Whatever you do, do not move forward on buying this piece of property until you at least do that minimal amount of work. You got
to
at least know that,
it's
got to fit. Do not just go blindly say, hey, I got it for a good price, now can make this work, because it may not be something that you can actually physically develop. I mean, if there's wetlands or issues like that, that has to be taken into account. If there's exorbitant requirements for setbacks, like side yard setbacks or rear setbacks or front yard setbacks, I mean, you don't know what it is, and so you have to have people look at that. That's what we do. That's what a good design team will look at to be able to say, yeah, all right, you can fit a 3,000 square foot building on this, but it can only be 30 feet wide. Well, Han, can we design a 3,000 square foot building that's 30 feet wide? Well, yeah, we can do that.
Absolutely.
We can do that. But, Doc, this is what it's going to look like. Are you okay with that? And then once you've got that information and you say, yeah, because I can get this property for, you know, pennies on a dollar, because it is a long, skinny piece of property and it doesn't work for the normal other kind of buildings that might be out there. Well, then maybe this is a gold mine that didn't work for everybody else, but it works for you. So I hope that answers that question. And that's at least what we would recommend that you do first. Spend a little bit of time up front, hire a good design team that understands dentistry and specifically what's going on, And if you would like, send the information over to us and Han and I will look at it.
Very good. Hey, Jim, before we close up, I do have a couple of things. One thing I'd like to share that I was looking at on Dentaltown. Okay, so we're ready for that?
Go ahead.
All right. So this is on cue to the topic of design build. Okay. Have a design that was posted. It came from a construction company. That was the first flag. And the comment was, I got this from the construction company, and here's the design. What do you think? I like it. I hate to bust, to burst people's bubble. All right, because a lot of time, most of this stuff are put up there with so little information, but enough for me to bleed a couple of pints of blood on. If it doesn't work, I don't care who designed it, okay, and how cheap you can get it, you can get it done for. If it doesn't work, it doesn't work. First of all, you can't have a closet, the size of a small bathroom, a half bath, and put a pan unit in there and put a patient in there and a staff member in there, a computer in there, unless they're twins, conjoining twins. All right? You can't, you get just things that you can't. Again, a project designed by a construction company is not the right way to do. If you want to invest the money, invest into a design firm, an architecture firm that specializes in or have strong experience in the dental, in the design of dental offices, and start over. That way they give you the information you need, the decisions and the recommendation that you need, so that way you don't sign a contract for a space that you can't use. Too much compromise to work with just doesn't make sense. Okay, design build doesn't work for most of the population, particularly for dentists. Okay, that's it, Jim.
Excellent. Yes, I guess we can't say that any more strongly than that. Obviously, we're glad that you spent the hour plus with us this evening. Hopefully, it was informative. And Han and I just, we love doing this stuff, and that's what keeps us going on a day-to-day basis is, we're just here to help. We're here to help educate. We're here to help you succeed. And that's why we get up every day to do this stuff. And we're excited about that because we want to see that. We want to see successful dentists and successful dental projects because it's just something we like. And, so tune in next week. We will talk about construction managers and how that process will work. I think you'll learn a whole lot of new stuff that you didn't know. And as always, please feel free, get a hold of us on our website. Send us emails or your questions, and we'll do what we can to answer them. Han, I'll give you the last words.
Very good. Jim won't confess to you, but I will. We are architectural junkies, okay? We love the stuff. I appreciate you spending the time with us this evening. Until next time, have a good evening.
You've been listening to HJT Design Radio Straight Talk with Jim and Han. To contact us and find out more info about upcoming shows, please log on to our website at www.hjtdesign.com. Until next time.